Hey, this is Britt D from resistradio.com, and you're listening to a podcast from Tuesday the 12th of June. I hope you're doing well. Before we look into some news, let's just go through a few site updates from resistradio.com. I've just added a new headlines section, which I thought would be useful. Basically a collection of various news feeds from around the globe. Yeah, just a whole load really. I mean, I don't sort of endorse any particular websites. You know, I've got sort of InfoWars news feeds on here, and I mean, I do have an issue with some of the stuff that gets written for InfoWars, but you know, I put it out there for you to read and make your own mind up about. You know, similarly, I've got articles from Press TV and also Russia Today. Actually, the Russia Today feed seems to have stopped working for some reason. But yeah, I put these two news organisations on there, fully aware that Press TV, who of course are an Iranian-controlled channel, and Russia Today, obviously a Russian-controlled channel, you know, they've got their own agenda as well, which is very much an anti-Western agenda. You know, of course, it's a huge media organization, and of course they're going to be influenced by the governments of their countries, but all the same, you know, it's refreshing to read the Press TV news articles. It does give a different perspective and cover stories that, you know, often aren't in the Western media, so they're on there as well. I've even got Reuters updates. You know, they're the latest kind of press releases, so that's useful. People like Max Kaiser, Gerald Salente, you know, I like their stuff. You know, of course, there are questions about those guys, there are questions about everybody. You know, it's all information, and this is the kind of information that I like to read and sift through and decide what I think is true and what isn't, and what's useful and what's not. That's what it's all about, isn't it? So yeah, check out that headlines section anyway. It's useful for the latest breaking news stories and interesting articles. I've also just set up a mobile site, so if you do sort of browse resistradio.com on a mobile, which of course, you know, more and more people do these days, then it should be automatically taking you to the mobile version of the site. I haven't actually been able to test that because I've got like a really old mobile phone. I haven't got one of these new smartphones at all because I try and avoid using phones whenever possible. But yeah, apparently if you go on there with a smartphone, it should be a bit easier to navigate. You don't get the whole, you know, big website. So yeah, so that's what's going on with resistradio.com. Of course, in the podcast section, if you haven't checked that out in the last few days, then I posted up the Red Ice Radio interview that myself and Tom Secker did with Henrik from Red Ice Radio. The first hour's up there. We were talking about the Anders Breivik trial, and if you're interested in that, definitely worth checking out that podcast. And I think I'll be putting up the second hour of that chat maybe in a week or so, because basically Red Ice Radio, they release the first hours for free and then they have the second hour for members. So I obviously don't want to sort of tread on any toes, but if I give it a little while, then I think it'll be okay to put that second hour up there. So yeah, check that out as well. So what's going on in the news? Well, the same old stuff, isn't it, really? War, chaos, propaganda, you know, the situation in Syria is obviously very much on the agenda at the moment. I mean, recently it did seem that things were calming down and that Assad maybe had a grip on things in that country, and maybe the Anglo-American Israeli Arab alliance, who are basically behind this uprising in Syria, who are fomenting this violence, who are funding Al-Qaeda in Syria. Basically, it looked like they were going to lose this battle. But, you know, now the propaganda is really, really in full effect, isn't it? I mean, news stories coming out all the time which are feeding into this demonization of Assad and of the Syrian regime. Lots of reports of things like children being used as human shields. This is a news story that just came out this morning. Syrian forces killing and sexually abusing children. And this is being claimed by the UN. Reporting to children in armed conflict says children have been tortured and used as human shields by forces loyal to Assad. The report quotes a witness to an attack on the village of Ain Laruz in Idlib province on 9th of March 2012, in which several dozen boys and girls between the ages of 8 and 13 were forcibly taken from their homes and used by soldiers and militia members as human shields, placing them in front of the windows of buses carrying military personnel into the raid on the village. The UN said it had collected dozens of witness accounts from children as young as 14 who were tortured in detention, as well as from former members of the Syrian military who were forced to witness or carry out acts of torture, the report says. Most child victims of torture describe being beaten, blindfolded, subjected to stress positions, whipped with heavy electrical cables, scarred by cigarette burns, and in one case, subjected to electrical shock to the genitals, the report says. So, could this be true? Well, of course it could be true. I mean, we can't rule that out. I mean, you know, there is a danger that people in the alternative media in the West are kind of playing down the possible crimes that are being committed by Assad's forces. It's always a possibility, you know. We should be careful not to paint Assad as some kind of good guy and the Syrian regime as some kind of whiter than white force, you know, because I'm sure that there are war crimes being committed, I'm sure there are atrocities being committed, but of course this could also be propaganda. You know, this report does refer to these witnesses and a number of children who claim that they were tortured. I mean, surely the people who interviewed these children would have been able to see some kind of physical evidence of this torture. I haven't actually read the report, so maybe in the report there are details about that, but in this report in The Guardian that I'm reading, there's no mention of the physical evidence for this torture, simply claims. And, you know, in a war, of course, the Syrian rebels are going to be telling their kids to say these kinds of things to UN investigators to make the Syrian regime look bad. So yeah, children being used in war, children being sexually abused and tortured. I mean, of course, it's a very emotive thing, isn't it, to talk about children being tortured. We recently had this story from the city of Hula, of all of these children being horrifically massacred, to which there are witnesses who say that was actually forces connected to the rebels who did that, and not the Syrian regime, as was claimed by the opposition. All of these kids who were basically stabbed to death and had their throats slit, you know, totally horrible stuff. And I mean, you do have to ask, like, why would it be in Assad's interest to do this kind of stuff, to slaughter kids, to torture kids? I mean, really, the Syrian regime doesn't need to do that, does it? You know, the Syrian armed forces are powerful enough. They really don't need to carry out this kind of awful attacks on kids, because that's obviously going to play into the propaganda against them. So, you know, if you were Assad, you would be trying as hard as possible not to give any kind of ammunition to the enemy. But yeah, more stuff coming out from Syria, of course. Last week we had the British Defence Secretary, actually it was William Hague, who said this, who referred to toxic gas supplies in Syria and how the West may be forced to go into the country to seize them, to seize these chemical weapons in case they fall into the wrong hands. And today, a story coming out of Press TV, which is that Israel is also using this excuse for possible military attacks on Syria. Israel considering military attack on Syria. Israel is apparently laying the groundwork for a possible military attack on Syria by alleging that Damascus could be using chemical weapons against the Syrian people. Tel Aviv has recently expressed concern about what it calls the use of chemical weapons in Syria. Israel says the weapons could fall into the wrong hands and that they may even be used by Syria to carry out an attack against Israeli forces. I mean, why Syria would want to preemptively attack Israeli forces with chemical weapons is kind of a big puzzle, isn't it, really? I mean, it's pretty absurd, really. You know, I've talked about Israel's nuclear weapons many times and their policy of massive retaliation in terms of any kind of attack. The Samson option in particular is pretty chilling when you read about it, how Israel, if they are attacked, they will just respond with massive nuclear assault, basically, because they have these hundreds of nuclear weapons, of course undeclared nuclear weapons, because Israel isn't a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. But yes, Press TV says that the pretext is being used to justify a possible military assault on Syria, even if it means triggering a broader conflict across the region. Ayub Kara, a senior member of the Israeli Likud party, led by Prime Minister Netanyahu, claimed in an interview with Israel Radio on June the 9th that the Syrian government has used chemical weapons against men, women and children during the past months of unrest in the country. However, recent reports indicated that the armed groups fighting against the Syrian government have found access to and plan to use chemical weapons acquired from Libya. And that's a report coming out of Russia today. So, yeah, no, really various reports coming out here. Reports that the rebels have found chemical weapons that they're going to use to carry out a false flag attack on civilians, blame that on the Syrian regime. And then the counterclaim that the Syrian regime might use these weapons, or that they could fall into the hands of terrorists and then be used by the terrorists. I mean, it's a big mess, isn't it, really? Propaganda from all sides. But, you know, what does this remind you of when you hear about these weapons of mass destruction that the West is going to have to go in to secure? Well, of course, it's Iraq, isn't it? I mean, it's the exact same narrative being used again now, nearly a decade later. You know, this was the narrative as well that has been used against Iran. I mean, it's tried and tested, isn't it? And the shocking thing is, you know, it does work. So, yeah, what's going to happen here? Are we going to see military intervention in Syria? Humanitarian intervention, as it's been called by the West? Well, according to William Hague, not. Another story coming out today said that he basically ruled out military intervention in the country, and he claimed that the situation in Syria wasn't like in Libya. This wasn't another Libya we were seeing, which was kind of a puzzling comment, really, because, you know, this could really be pushed as being far worse than Libya, because Libya was basically invaded when Gaddafi hadn't done anything. You know, there were these rebels massing in the city of Benghazi, plotting to overthrow Gaddafi and his regime, and Gaddafi had sent his troops down there, but, you know, no massacre had actually been carried out in Libya. But all the same, that was the green light for NATO to start bombing the country, for the West to start financing and arming the rebels. Of course, the SAS had been on the ground training the rebels from day one. So, you know, for Haig to say that Syria isn't another Libya is kind of strange, because Libya was far less worse than Syria is, you know, because there is undeniably massive violence in Syria. Of course, huge questions about who's causing that. But yeah, why has Haig ruled out military intervention? Well, it's because they want to, of course, get rid of Assad without having to do that. I mean, another military intervention would be pushing it a bit, really. They would be able to carry that out because it seems they can do whatever they want. You know, the civilians, the citizens of a country seem unable to prevent any kind of military attacks that their corrupt leaders want to carry out. But it would still be pushing it, wouldn't it, to get involved in another war in Syria, especially at the time of, you know, global depression, and at a time when the armed forces have just announced the loss of so many thousands of jobs. I can't remember the exact figure. It was another story that came out today about British military personnel having lost their jobs. But yeah, basically they don't want to do that. They don't think that they need to do that, because the plan obviously is to destabilize Syria to the extent where the people of Syria and the rebels basically overthrow their own government, and Assad is, you know, forced to leave without the West having to drop any bombs on that country. Of course, Al-Qaeda is in Syria. I mean, this is one of the real sort of dark ironies of this whole thing. You know, the West has admitted that Al-Qaeda is operating in Syria. William Hague just the other day confirmed that Al-Qaeda were operating in Syria, coming pretty late to the party, it has to be said, because even the US admitted that, you know, many months ago, that Al-Qaeda were in Syria. So yeah, this terrorist organization that the West has been battling for over a decade, particularly since 9/11, you know, this organization that supposedly killed 3,000 people on 9/11, you know, one of the defining moments really of the 21st century, and now instead of them becoming the enemy, instead of the West talking about the need to fight Al-Qaeda in Syria, no, Assad is the enemy now, even though Assad is fighting Al-Qaeda in Syria and has consistently said that it's terrorists who are causing this violence in his country, and that's why this force is being used in Syria to try and stop these Al-Qaeda terrorists. But of course, you know, the West are quite happy to turn a blind eye to these blatant contradictions, and the West are so eager to get rid of Assad as a path towards getting rid of Ahmadinejad and the Iranian regime, that they're, yeah, quite prepared to turn a blind eye to Al-Qaeda in Syria, and they won't offer any kind of support to Assad, but they will blame Assad for everything that's happening in the country. You know, it's pretty sick, isn't it? It's just really fucked up, basically. Another story, this isn't breaking news, but pretty interesting all the same, you might have missed it. Actually, some evidence in the mainstream media of the fact that the Syrian rebels aren't the good guys that a lot of the Western media tries to make them out to be. And this was a story about the Channel 4 journalist Alex Thompson, who basically has been working in Syria, and he wrote this blog for the Channel 4 news website, which was entitled "Set Up to Be Shot in Syria's No Man's Land. And yeah, it talks about how he was waiting at some checkpoint, a Syrian army checkpoint near Damascus. And let me just read out a bit of his blog. He's talking about being followed by four men in a black car, and says, "We move out behind," because the men beckoned his car to follow. "We are led another route, led in fact straight into a free fire zone, told by the Free Syrian Army to follow a road that was blocked off in the middle of no man's land. At that point there was the crack of a bullet and one of the slower three-point turns I've experienced. We screamed off into the nearest side street for cover. Another dead end. There was no option but to drive back out and onto the sniping ground and floor it back to the road we'd been led in on. Predictably, the black car was there, which had led us to the trap. They roared off as soon as we reappeared. I'm quite clear the rebels deliberately set us up to be shot by the Syrian army. Dead journos are bad for Damascus. So yeah, basically, this Channel 4 journalist, yeah, outright accusing Syrian rebels of trying to set him up to be shot dead, because that's great propaganda against the Syrian regime. And we've seen all this kind of propaganda, you know. Syrian Danny, of course, who was captured talking about setting off fake explosions whilst he was live on the air to the international press. And yeah, no doubt there's all kinds of psychological operations being carried out. I mean, there was a report from Thierry Maison, who writes for Voltaire.net, just came out as well, in which he claims there's going to be some kind of massive NATO psychological operation carried out in the next few days, where there's going to be filmed scenes shown on Syrian TV of massacres supposedly carried out by the regime. I mean, he doesn't actually name any sources in the article, which is a concern, but take the information as it is, and it's certainly a possibility, you know. That's what happens in wars, that's what wars are all about, psychological operations. So yeah, pretty interesting stuff anyway. Well, moving on to some other stories now. A story that came out yesterday, which was pretty interesting, from Israel. And this is a story about graffiti at the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial. This is a memorial, obviously, to Jews murdered during the Holocaust in Jerusalem, and apparently loads of graffiti had been sprayed around this memorial, and one of the pieces of graffiti said, "Thank you, Hitler." So let me read out some of the quotes from the graffiti. "Only because of the Holocaust did we receive a state from the UN. If Hitler hadn't existed, the Zionists would have created him. And wake up, Jews. The cynical, evil regime does not protect us. It only endangers us." Well, I mean, fair enough points, really. But yeah, of course, this hasn't gone down very well with the regime in Israel. And Minister Yuli Edelstein said, "This is an escalation and an unprecedented crossing of red lines," and he described it as a spit in the face of Holocaust victims. Now, interestingly, this hasn't been blamed on Muslims, as you might expect, but it's actually been blamed on ultra-Orthodox Jews. "The references to the Holocaust and Zionism appear to reflect the views of a small section of ultra-Orthodox Jews who believe the State of Israel was created in violation of religious doctrine. They claim Israel can only exist when the Messiah comes and oppose Zionism as an abomination." And there's not actually any evidence presented to support this accusation that it was these ultra-Orthodox Jews. But yeah, it's interesting that they were blamed. I mean, you know, obviously the State of Israel trying to demonize any kind of group that's critical to the existence of Israel, which these ultra-Orthodox Jews are. You know, very interesting that these guys who really do follow Judaism, you know, openly say that they don't believe Israel should exist. So, no real evidence that it was these guys, of course. That doesn't mean it wasn't them. It does seem strange to me that they would write, "Thank you, Hitler," because I don't really see what relevance that has to their argument. And of course, there's the distinct possibility that this was a setup, and this graffiti was planted there by the government itself to demonize this group of ultra-Orthodox Jews, because the State of Israel, you know, really is cracking down now on anybody who doesn't toe the Zionist line, which will tie into another story I'm going to talk about in a second. But it was pretty interesting to me that this story was picked up by a lot of the Western media. I mean, the one that I just read was from SkyNews.com, but this story was in various different places, And you know, it's interesting why, because this was pretty much a non-story. I mean, this is about just a little bit of graffiti on a memorial, which is already being cleaned up, judging by the picture that's connected to the story. So yeah, if this had happened anywhere else, you know, this wouldn't have made the international media. But because it's Israel, and the Western media has a bias towards Israel, and this was another good opportunity for Israel to play the victim and to play the Holocaust card, and we see that, you know, so often. And yeah, this ongoing demonization of enemies of the state of Israel, of the Zionist state of Israel, or even people who don't fit into the Zionist model, because the Zionists, after all, are racist, and they want to create an ethnically pure state of Jews. And another story that just came out of Reuters.com is about the number of African migrants to Israel who are being forcibly deported at the moment, often back to kind of war zones like the Ivory Coast and the Sudan. Out of Israel, back to Africa. African migrants chosen for deportation from Israel were nervously awaiting a knock on the door or a tap on the shoulder on Tuesday as immigration officials rounded up hundreds for departure flights due to begin at the weekend. "The people are very tense, it's pretty traumatic," said Jacob Berry, a spokesman for the South Sudanese community of migrants. "There are children here who only speak Hebrew. They won't even know the language where they're going." So apparently Africans are being stopped on the street and issued with deportation orders. Many of the migrants had been working in hotels and restaurants. Apparently a lot of them had been working illegally, but you know, that's not really an excuse to just suddenly deport them, is it? So these people have been rounded up and sort of sent to detainment camps, apparently. And yeah, they're trying to remove nearly 50,000 people, apparently. "The next stage is the removal from Israel of all the infiltrators from Eritrea and Sudan, whose number comes close to 50,000 people," said Interior Minister Eli Yishai. So referring to them as infiltrators as well, you know, like they're some kind of enemy, when apparently most of these people were, you know, just trying to earn a living and just doing jobs. There's a quote here from an Eilat hotel director who said the expulsions were a terrible shame. "Most of them are educated people who fled from a bloody war in their homeland. They speak a number of languages, most of them are Christian, and they did their job in the best way possible," David Bloom of Israel was quoted as saying. So yeah, Israel just forcibly deporting people that don't fit into the Zionist dream, the Zionist dream for Israel. So yep, Israel, you know, behind a lot of this stuff. Israel obviously key to what's happening in the Middle East. Israel wants to get rid of Assad, Israel wants to get rid of the Iranian regime, and Israel wants to get rid of anybody who isn't Jewish, like all of these poor black African migrants who are just being rounded up and sent back to war zones in some cases. So that's it for today, guys. Coming up to the half hour, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast from resistradio.com for the 12th of June. My name's Britt D. If you haven't checked out the Connect section of the website, then please do so, and you can find links there to the resistradio.com Facebook page, Twitter account, and various other things like that. So thanks for listening, and I will catch you on the next one. Take it easy. Cheers.